Institute for Community Health in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Dr. Arsenault is a researcher and technical advisor on a wide range of public health-related projects, ranging from community-based interventions to health services quality improvement and primary care research. Her formal training is in nutritional science and epidemiology, and her personal research interests include the behavioral health of youth, healthy eating and physical activity, and community-based programs and interventions.
Thank you. I have to say I'm very excited to hear that community thought local evaluators are really helpful, because that is the bulk of what I do in my job. And I think we do a tremendous amount for local communities. So with that, I'm going to kind of frame this present after I say that I have no relationships to disclose. Just to frame the perspective of this presentation, because I'm going to be taking you kind of down now to that grantee or subrecipient level and really talk through some exploratory work that we did with a couple grantee communities. At ICH, I work a lot on program evaluations that are related to youth, substance use, and teen pregnancy prevention, and other risk behaviors. That's a big part of what we do as an organization. But for today, I'm going to talk about a couple of our projects that were drug-free community grantees in Eastern Massachusetts. ICH has worked with a number of these grantees in Eastern Mass. And I'm going to talk to you about two of these. We focused on substance use and their outcomes, but then we're really exploring mental health, which was the new thing we hadn't done before. So I'm going to highlight what our student level outcomes were, focused on mental health, and then we're going to look at some data. So I'm going to throw some charts up, and hopefully they will be informative for you. And interesting, not just as the topic area is interesting, but also I kind of want to give you or leave you with some recommendations that could be applied to any such community level intervention focused on substance use. So for those that may be not super familiar, the Drug-Free Communities program is a federal funding mechanism for local level coalitions focused on reducing substance use among youth. It's been around since 1998, and since then has funded over 2,000 of these coalitions across the U.S. And its kind of baseline foundation is built on the idea that local problems require local solutions. So it's not a one-size-fit-all kind of mechanism. These communities have full flexibility to implement whatever different interventions or strategies they feel will work best for their communities. So it's very flexible. But they do have to collect a certain set of core outcome measures related to substance use. This chart is just from the most recent national evaluation report, and it demonstrates that since inception of the DFC funding mechanism, the grantees to date have achieved pretty significant reductions in the use of alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana among high school students as well as middle school students. And these represent some of the core measures that all grantees have to collect, the 30-day use variables. And typically these data are collected by every coalition using a student-level survey like a YRBS. So for what I worked on with our two grantees, they had been collecting youth data for many, many years. So we were looking at data collected in 2007 and 2008, and then also their data they collected in 2013. And we wanted to look at what was happening with mental health over this time period, because we knew they were achieving reductions in 30-day substance use. But to this date, we hadn't looked at mental health. So we wanted to see if these achievements were reaching kids that also had poor mental health status. And then we wanted to kind of walk through and think through what the implications of these results were going to be for each of these communities. I'm keeping them anonymous just because I think it's sort of the right thing to do. So Town A is a little bit more urban and dense setting. They have had 10 full years of DFC funding. So their funding just ended, and they're kind of in that sustainability, figuring out what they're going to do next phase. It's a broad-based coalition. They've done a number of things, made quite a few major accomplishments over the years. They do use a YRBS survey to collect their core measure data, and it is a very diverse high school population. As of 2015, a full 65% of their students were non-white. So it's an urban, diverse, and interesting community to work with. Town B is a little bit different. They're a little further away from the Boston area. They've had 9 years of DFC funding to date, and they're currently in their last year. They, too, have a very broad-based coalition and have done a number of different activities. They use the Communities That Care Pride survey to collect their core measure data, and a bit less diverse than Town A. 16% of their high school population is non-white. So we have two towns, two different YRBS surveys, but we wanted to look at mental health in as close a way or a comparable way as possible. So we looked at the YRBS survey and pulled the mental health related questions for Town A, and these are standard YRBS wording. There was a question on self-harm, there's a question on depressive symptoms, and there were two questions on suicide, one asking about attempts or considering attempts, and one on actual attempts. So we took these four questions and we categorized students into three groups based on their responses. Healthy students were those that did not report depression, suicide, or self-harm. So this is our healthy group. The second group was labeled depression, and these are the students that only indicated that they had depressive symptoms, so no suicide and no self-harm. And then the final group were those students that did report either self-harming behavior or suicidal ideation or attempt, regardless of whether they also reported depressive symptoms. Town B, on the other hand, used the Pride survey, which doesn't really approach mental health in the same way as the YRBS. All of the four questions that were mental health from this survey kind of get at the construct of depression. So it includes a question about feeling depressed, but it also asks students to agree with a statement that they think life is not worth it, that they think they're no good, or that they think that they're a failure. And then the response categories are kind of this range of agreement. So for this, we categorized students again into three groups, but we had to be a little more creative in how we did it. We assigned scores to each of the response categories, the really strong no to the really strong yes. Healthy students were those that had a one for every item, so they did not endorse any of the questions. The other end of the spectrum, the students we categorized as poor mental health were those that responded either a little yes or a big yes, so at least a three on every question, and this was our poor mental health group. And then the kids in between, we came up with the term variable mental health. These were the kids that, you know, their responses ranged from a one to a three on any of the questions. And we did examine kind of our face validity of the Pride survey questions. And you can see with the kids in the poor mental health, obviously the way we created the variable, pretty much it's universally they are endorsing every single one of these items. And the kids in the variable category are a lot more variable. And of interest or kind of particular note is they have a very low amount or rate of kids who are endorsing the concept of being a failure. So that's really a key differentiator for that poor mental health group. The sample description is here. We had for Town A about 1,400 students in each of the years. Again, this is high school only. Town B, we had about 1,500 to 1,600 in each of the years. Distribution of gender and grade was pretty consistent between the 2 years for each town. Town A was, however, getting increasingly diverse from 2007 to 2013, and we know that's continued even through 2015 today. So to the overall trends, this is what we already knew was going on in the community. This is what they had already achieved. We've written about this in evaluation reports. This was nothing that was surprising at all, but I wanted to show that consistent with the national evaluation results for DFC communities, these two also were seeing reductions in 30-day alcohol, cigarette, marijuana, as well as other illicit drugs. 30-day use of other illicits. And both towns were kind of starting off in similar places as well. But what we hadn't looked at until now was what was going on with mental health over the years. So Town A, in the chart on the top, we see it's pretty solid, pretty consistent. Since 2007, there's actually been a slight increase in the proportion of kids we categorize as healthy. And the depressed group and the suicidal group remained pretty stable. So that was good. That was reaffirming for Town A to know. Town B, on the other hand, looks a little bit different. 2008, only 10% of kids are categorized with poor mental health. But in 2013, that more than doubled to 23% of kids. And they had picked up on this finally with the 2013 data, which is what kind of prompted this deeper analysis. So we wanted to then take what was going on and see and apply it to substance use. So this is just a summary of what we looked at with the overall trends. But stratifying each of these by mental health category, we wanted to see if those improvements, those overall improvements in 30-day use were realized across the mental health categories. And the great news is that they were, almost universally, in both towns and regardless of which survey was being used. So here's the rate of 30-day alcohol use by mental health status. You can see in Town A, there are reductions in the healthy group, the depressed group, and the suicidal group. Town B, we also see reductions in the healthy, the variable, and the poor mental health groups. The other message that you do get by looking at these charts is that strong relationship between substance use and mental health. So the higher rates, even with the reductions, the higher rates of use are still seen for those groups of kids that are suicidal or have poor mental health. And that's a known relationship. So that, too, is not necessarily novel. 30-day cigarette use, it was the same story. Pretty strong reductions in use overall. And Town A and Town B achieved pretty significant reductions among the groups that had poor mental health or were suicidal. Marijuana use was a bit more iffy. Town A did manage to achieve some little incremental reductions in all categories of mental health. But Town B, the kids that were categorized with poor mental health, actually their use of marijuana actually increased by 2013. And again, other illicit drug use, a similar story, use was coming down across for all mental health categories. So the implications of these results, what did these communities think of it or do with this result? Well, the results did confirm the strong associations between 30-day substance use and poor mental health. This was true for both towns. It was true for both time points. Results also suggested that the overall declines in substance use were realized across the mental health categories. This was true for alcohol, cigarettes, and other illicits for both towns. And it was true for marijuana use in Town A. But for Town B, there was an additional implication to the results that we found, and I wanted to talk through that because this is what I found really fascinating about getting to really look at this local level data in this way. So for Town B, despite overall reductions in substance use, they had a growing proportion of kids with poor mental health. And what that ended up doing or showing us is that the substance using kids in Town B now in 2013 had a very different mental health profile than the kids back in 2007. And this has real implications for the coalition. They are now facing a much more complex challenge for their future prevention activities. And we looked at this very simply. We were just flipping the way we were looking at the data. So rather than looking at rates of use across mental health categories, we're now looking at the mental health status within use or across user categories. So these are the two pie charts for Town B's alcohol users, the profile of the mental health. And just paying attention to the orange triangles, you'll see that in 2008, 12% of users, alcohol users, had poor mental health. But in 2013, 34% of alcohol users had poor mental health. So in despite the overall reduction, they have 229 fewer kids using alcohol. They actually have more kids with the comorbid poor mental health and use of alcohol. So the problem looks like it's better, but then there's also this subpopulation that's making the problem a little bit more challenging. Similar, I won't go into the detail for all the other substances, but the story is similar. The proportion of kids or the proportion of the substance using population that have poor mental health was increasing between the 5 or 6 year time span. So for smokers, it went from 19% to 44% with poor mental health. Marijuana users, it grew from 13% to 38%. And illicit drug use went from 17% up to 38%. So what did these towns do with these results? Well, Town A was very happy, obviously. Interestingly, Town A had an underlying focus on mental health throughout their years of DFC funding. So in one respect, it kind of reaffirmed their commitment to thinking about mental health all these years and in the context of substance use. So our results were incorporated into their evaluation. You know, they finished their 10 years of funding, and they're now kind of revamping and going it alone without the federal funding. Town B still has a year to go of their DFC funding. So these results really inform the coalition's very recent interest in looking at mental health. Based on our findings, we also went in and did a series of youth focus groups to do some qualitative data collection so we can kind of get a better sense of, well, what is going on at the high school? What do these kids really think about mental health, and what may be at the root of this increase that occurred in the past 6 or 7 years? And they're also kind of revisiting what their plan is for the next year of their funding and going to widen or broaden their focus beyond just substance use. So as an evaluator, I want to leave you with a few recommendations that are applicable to any community-level program that's focused in this topic area or any other risk-related behavior topic area. First of all, I would urge you to always collect the data that will allow you to examine other outcomes along with substance use. If you're confined to just collecting core measures, you may be limiting your ability to detect emerging issues in your population. You might also want to consider the actual tools that you're using to collect your data. They may or may not be capturing these additional outcomes that would allow you to do some more exploration later on. When we had the results for Town B and we did some focus groups, you know, some issues came up that we wanted to go back to the survey data and see if they were there. Unfortunately, that tool didn't collect a question related to that, so we weren't able to kind of triangulate the quantitative and the qualitative. So your choice of survey and data collection might matter down the road. And I would urge you always to plan ahead for technical assistance or outside expertise if you might need it down the road for more in-depth analyses. And finally, mixed methods, incorporating qualitative data collection is always excellent to provide context to your quantitative data. Thank you.
Thank you.